So we continue reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 6, entitled The Purusha Sukta Confirmed, again, text 40 and 41. Visudam kevalam jnana pratyaksam yakavastitam satyam puramadajantam Nirguna Nityam Advayam. 41. Risevidante Munaya Prasantatmindriyasaya Yadata Devasattarkais Tirodhita Viplatam. Translation. The personality of Godhead is pure, being free from all contaminations of material tinges. He is the absolute truth and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is all-pervading without beginning or end, O Narada. O great sage, the great thinkers can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Otherwise, by untenable arguments, all is distorted and the Lord disappears from our sight. We continue with the purport. Therefore, personally, he has nothing to do, for everything is being carried out by his omnipotent energies. This is confirmed by the Vedic mantras, Parasya Shakti Vividai Vasuryate Svabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. This suggests a specific spiritual form which can never be experienced by the material senses. He can be seen only when the senses are purified by devotional service. Yame vaisa vrinute tena labhya. As such, there are basic differences between the Lord and the living entities in so many respects. No one can be compared to the Lord, as the Vedas declare, ekam evadvityam brahma dvaitadvaibhayam bhavati. The Lord has no competitor, and he has nothing to fear from any other being, nor can anyone be equal to him. Although he is the root of all other beings, there are basic differences between him and other beings. Otherwise, there would have been no necessity for the statement in the previous verse that no one can know him 100% as he is. Nayam vidanti tatvena, that no one can fully understand him, is explained also in this verse, but the qualification for understanding to some degree is mentioned here. Only the prasantas, or the unalloyed devotees of the Lord, can know him to a greater extent. The reason is that the devotees have no demands in their lives, but to be obedient servants of the Lord, while all others, namely the empiric philosophers, the mystic, and the fruitive workers, all basically have some demand. As such, they cannot be pacified. The fruitive workers wants reward for his work. The mystic wants some perfection of life, and the empiric philosopher wants to merge in the existence of the Lord. Somehow or other, as long as there's a demand for sense satisfaction, there's no chance for pacification. On the contrary, by the unnecessary dry speculative arguments, the whole matter becomes distorted, and thus the Lord moves still further away from our understanding. The dry speculators, however, because of their following the principles of austerity and penance, can have knowledge of the impersonal feature of the Lord to some extent, but there is no chance of their understanding. His ultimate form is Govinda, because only the amalatmanas, or the completely sinless persons, can accept pure devotional service to the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Yesan tundakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanda moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrutta. So the Lord has nothing to do. So that verse begins, Natasya Karyam Karanam Chavidyate. He has no reason to do anything. Of course, there's many things he will do and can do, but he's not forced to work as we are forced to work. In this world, we are very much forced to work, or we will starve, or we will freeze, or something else. We need to continuously work to make adjustments for our requirements. We are dependent on work in that way. But the Supreme Lord is not dependent. He is completely independent. Nityanam, nityanam, nityananam, chetanas, chetananam. That he is completely independent. He is the one person on whom all others are dependent. Eko Bhavanam Yuvidadati Kamam. All other living beings depend on Krishna. So here it is explained in the Vedic mantras how then the Supreme Lord manifests himself in all his different energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Sruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. So his various energies are pervading everywhere in different forms. And it says they spring forth from Swabhaviki. Swabhav means his own nature. They come forward from his own nature, Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. So Jnana Bala Kriya Cha means knowledge, strength, and benefits. So the nature of the Lord is that he is manifesting himself in unlimited knowledge, that he ends all nescience, he ends all ignorance, therefore he ends all fear, because the unknown is fearful. It is due to the fact that we cannot understand what is happening to us that fear is overcoming us. Fear of what might come, fear of the future, fear of impending death. But death, Prabhupada explains, is nothing like going to sleep for 7 months and then you'll wake up in the womb again to take another birth after an extra 2 months. So in this way, the Supreme Lord is the emblem of all knowledge. He is Bhala because he is unlimitedly strong. Of course, the particular form of the Lord, which is known as Bala, is Lord Baladev or Lord Balaram. There is the embodiment of strength. And not so much the embodiment of physical strength, but in particular the embodiment of spiritual strength. So it is explained in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that it is Lord Krishna who gives us the process of devotional service. He gives us the different rules and regulations of the process that we need to follow. We also find that Krishna is described as Govinda, as the Siksha Guru. It says Govinda is the Siksha Guru because after all it was Govinda who spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Lord Krishna, to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So therefore Govinda is known as the Siksha Guru, or the one who's instructing. And the instructions of Govinda are perfect instructions, and anybody who follows these instructions will be delivered without exception, without a doubt. There is no one who would be not delivered. There is no one who would be too sinful. Everyone can be delivered. But it is said that then one prays to Lord Balaram. Not only Krishna, but also Balaram. Then we pray to Balaram and he will give us the strength by which we can follow these instructions of Krishna. That is the nature of Lord Balaram, or Lord Nityananda, who is none different from Lord Balaram. So therefore we depend on Balaram or on Lord Nityananda for the spiritual strength to follow the instructions of Krishna. And that way he is Bala. Then the Kriya, or the benefit, is of course unlimited. It is explained in the Nectar of Devotion, when we are taking to devotional service, that immediately everything becomes all auspicious. Everything becomes all beneficial. That is the nature of devotional service. That every activity will only bestow more and more blessings upon you. Whereas the activity itself is already a blessing. The activity of devotional service is a blessing which will bestow only so many more blessings upon us. Therefore, everything is all auspicious. And in this way, the Kriya is unlimited. And therefore, Krishna is known as Vasudeva Parakriya, or the unlimited benefits that are coming, the supreme benefit from the Supreme Lord. So in this way, The nature of the Supreme Lord is explained in this verse. And, of course, the nature of the Supreme Lord is special because it is unlimited. And that is the nature of the Lord's spiritual form. That is the nature of spiritual energy, that there is no limit. So, for many of us, that is maybe the convincing argument that we always wanted to go beyond the limits. Well, here we can go beyond the limits. The sky is the limit, they say. Why? The sky the limit. There is no limit. Even the sky is not the limit. Right? Because in the spiritual sky, there is no limit. Everything is just eternally and eternally increasing and increasing in experience of ecstasy. So in that way, we are experiencing great nectar. The Lord, it says, has a spiritual form which can never be experienced by the material senses. And the verse in this regard quoted is, Atasi Krishna Namadi Nabhavit Grayam Indriye Sevam Mukehi Jivado Swayam Eva Spuratiyada. It says that by the material senses one cannot see the Supreme Lord, but only when he is pleased by our service, particularly by engaging the tongue in his service, then he will reveal himself. So everything depends on the Supreme Lord. He can be seen only when the senses are purified by devotional service. And it is certainly not so that it's a matter of engaging a certain amount of devotional service. That you can say, well, if you complete so much devotional service, then you'll get the mercy. No. The Supreme Lord, he can do anything and everything. If he desires, he may manifest himself before us, and if he doesn't, he will not manifest himself. That's up to him. He can do anything he wants, completely independent. Not that you can chant 1,000,000 rounds. We can see that Haridas Thakur had this this vow that he was going to chant, what was it, 1 koti, I think. 1 koti. Which is like 10 million names, and he was doing that by chanting these 300,333 names a day, actually. And then if you do that for 10 years or something, and you chant one extra, then you can complete it. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the same vow. Anyway, so it's the chanting of so many rounds is a wonderful feat. And Haridas achieved the greatest benefit. No one could compare in realization to Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur disappeared, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would personally glorify him, and it was as if he was speaking with 5 mouths. It was unlimited ocean of glorification about his wonderful qualities, because Haridas Thakur was such an exalted personality. But still, we should understand that even if you chant such a fixed number of rounds, there's no guarantee at all that you will perceive Krishna, and that you will know Krishna, that you will understand Krishna. That is not required. Krishna can do whatever he wants, and if he wants to make himself known to you, then he will be known. Just like Narada Muni, as a little boy, when he was serving the Bhakti Vedantas and taking their remnants, he was becoming purified, and he received transcendental instruction from them. Then, when he was 5 years old, one day, when his mother was milking a cow, she was bitten by a snake, and she died. So the little boy, due to the transcendental instructions, was able to see it all spiritually, and was able to see this is the arrangement of Krishna. Therefore, he could understand that there was nothing to worry about, and that it must have been Krishna's desire for him to now leave home. So he did. He left home, and he went into the world, and finally sat down under a tree somewhere, began to meditate, according to the directions of the Bhakti Vedantas, and in due course of time, he had the darshan of the Supreme Lord. And when he had the darshan of the Supreme Lord, he only had the darshan of the Lord to tell him that you will not see me again. So that was not very enlivening, but it was like that, that Narad was not able to see the Lord again for a very, very long time. So that is the way the Lord works. If he decides not to show himself, then you can follow everything. You can follow all the rules of the scriptures. You can follow the whole process, but it won't help. It's amazing. As soon as you pick up a glass of water, our devotees wake up. every time. Is that what it is? And I'll try and stop giving myself away. Anyway, we are discussing how the Lord is not revealing himself, even to those who are following the entire process, even to those who are becoming free of the lower modes of material nature, because he's completely independent. That is the point. But yet, he can be captured. The Lord can be captured by devotion. Like we were seeing a description in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how all the devotees of Bengal came to Jagannath Puri to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, he said, I'm so indebted to you. And he said, I'm so indebted to you, I don't know how to repay you. I am only a mendicant. I have nothing. What do I have? And I'm a mendicant. I have no money. There's nothing I can give you. That all I have is this body. So this body belongs to you. That you just simply order me and I will go wherever you say. So when the devotees heard that, they felt very overwhelmed. They felt very, very emotionally involved because here Krishna was just saying to them, Lord Chaitanya was saying that I'm your property. I'm just your property. You tell me what you want. Because of your devotion, I'm completely indebted to you. So the Lord can become indebted to his devotee. This is the unique situation. Not that he is the supreme, independent, almighty, omnipotent, all-pervading personality of Godhead, who is so huge, who is greater than the greatest, right? Who is more powerful than the most powerful, who can do anything, who is inconceivable, whose universal form is so large, right? So huge, right? That it is practically inconceivable to perceive, and yet that universe is simply coming like a mustard seed from the even greater form of Mahavishnu. And even that, if the Lord desires so, he can take much greater forms. There is no limit to his greatness. Oh, God is great, God is great, God is great. How great is the Lord? Oh, and we are insignificant ants, right? He is Vibhu, we are Anu, atomic in size, you know, smaller than germs compared to Lord Indra, right? We are smaller in comparison to the Supreme Lord than the germ is to Lord Indra, because the Lord is unlimited, right? And here we are, very tiny and limited, little insignificant creatures, right? Like that, we can go on. But actually, he becomes indebted. He feels indebted. So that is the system. He can be purchased. He can be purchased by affection. He can be purchased by those who are willing to simply serve him because of affection, not because they have to, right? If you serve him because you have to, I have to serve Krishna. I hate it, but I have to do it anyway, because otherwise I'm going to take another birth. Ooh, no, not another birth. So I have to serve Krishna. It's horrible, I know, but I have to do it anyway because I don't want to take another birth. Shrutim apare smritim itre bharatam anye buddha bhava. That Most people, it says, they are studying the Shruti, the Smriti, or the Mahabharat simply out of fear. Out of fear for material existence. But aham iham yasya linde, what is it now? Can't remember now. Anyway, Raghunath Upadhyaya, Raghupati Upadhyaya was quoting this verse. He had composed it and he played that I am simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is playing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. Yeah, that was his understanding. So he wasn't thinking about the all-powerful, all-great Supreme Personality of Godhead. People become very religious if something heavy happens. Like yesterday afternoon, someone walked in who was having a girlfriend, and he had a little daughter of the girlfriend, and then she was only 32 years old, and then she got cancer and died. And he was completely devastated. Then he came to buy the Bhagavad Gita. And I spoke with him for about an hour. Others also spoke to him. But that is how it goes, right? When we experience the crushing teeth of the Supreme Lord, yes, then we become fearful. Then we become humbled. Then we want to take shelter. But this is not good enough. That is out of fear for material existence. Of course, Krishna appreciates that. He appreciates that, but he wants more than that. He wants service out of affection. He wants service because we actually out of love. Like this person yesterday was saying, but one thing I cannot understand, you know, how can all this happen, right? If God is the all-loving God, that we couldn't understand. And even can we understand? And can we really understand that Krishna is so kind to us when we are here in this hellish material world? He is so merciful. Boy, it's heavy, isn't it? God, is it heavy? How kind is Krishna? Right? So to really appreciate the kindness of Krishna, to really appreciate that he is very merciful, to really appreciate that he cares for us, and to actually see that can only be experienced for one who is giving up all desires to enjoy in this material world. One must take shelter of Krishna then and do everything for Krishna. And if we make sacrifice for Krishna, he will give us some taste in exchange, and because of that taste, then we can do more and more devotional service. Then the exchange begins, and we begin to see how Krishna is very active in our life, how he's not at all invisible, but how he is actually actively arranging everything in our life, and how he's playing with us, and how he is pulling us every step of the way. And in that way, we speak the same as those devotees in Bengal, or in Puri, who came from Bengal, and after Lord Chaitanya told them, I'm your property. Then the devotees, they were very happy and they stayed with the Supreme Lord, but then after a while they went away. So why did they go away? Because the Supreme Lord just arranged it like that and made them go away. So then there is that verse, Katira Putali Yena Kuake Nachaya. And Prabhupada uses that verse when he writes the song, the poem that he wrote at the Boston Pier, because he also writes about this Katira Putali, or the wooden doll that is just dancing. Okay? Just make me dance the way you like. So, of course, Prabhupada was certainly not like a piece of wood. Rather, he was the opposite. He worked so hard. He didn't leave anything to chance. He tried everything, and then after he tried anything, then he would say, now it's up to you. Now it is up to you. Even there, when he arrived at the Boston Pier, basically, That's what he said. You know, it's all up to you. I don't know why you've brought me. It's up to you. Whatever will happen. But first he had crossed the ocean, got his heart attacks, etc., struggled so hard to even get there, struggled so hard to get his Bhagavatam, struggled so hard to get his P form so that he could leave India, right, with the immigration clearance, etc. Endless, endless struggle. So we must struggle. We must, in the struggle we express our devotion. It is just like a bull. If a bull is just standing and eating, he becomes fat and lazy and nasty. He becomes just, he becomes in an aggressive, rotten mood, you know. Right? Anybody who comes near, he feels like taking him on the horns. Because he's not satisfied. He's very frustrated. But when the bull is working, then he's satisfied. The animals like to work. When the bullocks are being trained to work, then they are happy. They, after plowing a good field together, they know they've done it, you know. The bull thinks, that was a good job. I did a good job there, you know. Huh? Look what I did. I plowed this whole field. Don't think that the bull is so stupid that he doesn't know that he plowed the whole field. He knows. He knows. And he's proud of it. You know, he's proud of it. That's my job. Right? Yes. Like that. So in this way, there's an intimate relationship between the bull, the bullock, and the bullock driver, and together they plow the field. And they're a team, you know, and they're not. We've done it together, you know. It's the two of us, right? We've done it, right? And they have that camaraderie, and they're together, me and my bullock. And they like each other. They have affection, right? The boss is thinking in the morning, let me bring him some straw. He worked so hard, right? And he brings it to him, and the bullock affectionately rubs its huge nose against his clothes, licks with a big tongue, splooch, right? To express his affection, yeah? Because they are working together like a team, right? So we are also in the same way, we are just like bullocks, right, in with Krishna. Krishna is guiding us. On our own, we can't do anything. He's guiding us. On a bullock, you couldn't just tie the plow behind and say, you know, now go plow the field. That he couldn't do. That would be too much. In the same way, we can't function. What can we do by ourselves? Okay? But with the help of the Supreme Lord, who is steering us and guiding us every step of the way, and by working with all our might, we can actually do it. We can do it. Then Krishna will do the rest. He will actually sow the seeds of love of God right behind us. Right? Wherever we go, he will sow them right behind us. And a miracle will happen. Soon we'll see it. These seeds will begin to sprout and ultimately will produce the fruits, amazing enough, right? And we have been part of it. In this way, we are part of this wonderful movement, and although we are not very intelligent, whatever energy we have, we may use it just like bullocks. And Krishna wants to see our affection. It may be a little clumsy, just like a big tongue, right? But the Lord doesn't mind that. He appreciates that we are simple beings who do not have so much capacity. Compared to Him, right, we are certainly less intelligent, right, compared to Him. Right. But that doesn't mean that He is sitting there and looking like, look at those dumb living entities, right? Look at those brainless creatures, pea brains they are, these human beings, right? Compared to His unlimited intelligence, we are indeed pea brains. But He's not looking like that with contempt. Okay? Rather, He's appreciating. He's saying, look, how this tiny little living entity with His little pea brain is using His little bit of energy, okay, and is doing such nice service. Just see. Because this is our position. We are so insignificant. And Lord Krishna knows it. But He is not arrogant and proud, and looking at, look how insignificant they are, right? No. He's appreciating us for what we are and what we do with it. And he's arranged shelter for us in so many ways. We can simply meditate on his transcendental lotus feet, and there is so much mercy to get. Because he will simply help us to overcome our sinful reactions, everything that binds us, because we get bound by karma. And this effect of karma is very, very strong. One cannot underestimate it. Karma is so strong that there is nothing you can do to escape it. You cannot run away from it. You may think that you will see. People will think that, oh, we just read that it is going to happen, the axis of the earth is going to change, the oceans will move, etc., and everything will go underwater. One former ISKCON devotee wrote an article about it recently. He wrote a book about it, actually. And it's now being published. And I just saw an article about it. So some people believe that that would happen. And they start looking at the world map, and they start thinking, how will I avoid this karma? I bet karma is coming, tidal waves. Let me get out of here. Let me go somewhere else. I'll go to a higher spot, right, so that it won't go underwater when the waves come, and I'll just live there on my little mountain plateau, and I'll be high and dry. Yeah? I'll buy one of these houses. But if you're supposed to die, you can escape it. Yeah? You may be killed by a mountain goat, you know, or by an avalanche, anything. Yes? There are many stories of that. We remember that story about the prince who was supposed to be killed by a swine. It is a Puranic story. He was supposed to be killed by a swine on a certain day, and therefore, naturally, they were very, very worried, and they naturally made arrangements for his protection. So there was one tower, and they placed him in this isolated tower, guards around it, everything, making sure that all the boars in the whole kingdom were finished. There was not one boar alive in the whole kingdom. Let's see if our prince will be killed by a boar. Right? No way. But then at the specific time, as he was in the tower, a shield fell down of the wall and hit him on the head and then just killed him. And later when they looked, there was this tiny little boar, you know, like big teeth on the shield. And exactly that little boar had, bang, fallen on his head. So in that way he was killed. You know? Many stories we know like that. We also know the story about this man, and it was told to him, whatever you do between 3 and 5 on Thursday, don't go out of your house. It will be very inauspicious for you. You will be killed. And he was sitting inside the house, and he was not going to go out for anything. But at 3:15, a telephone call came. His daughter had a severe accident, and he ran out of the door and just didn't look and got run over himself and died on the spot. Yeah. So many stories, how you cannot avoid your karma. That is the point I'm trying to make. You cannot run away from your karma. Rather, by running away from your karma, you run right into your karma. Right? That is the way it goes. Whatever you do to escape karma, it is not possible. But the Supreme Lord, he can lift you above karma. No one else. Only Krishna can. Now, you can perform certain activities which can purify you from karma. These are also activities given by Krishna. But yajna danas tapas karma. It says that if you engage in yajna, in sacrifice, in austerities, in giving in charity, with these activities you can counteract, you can perform atonement. And this kind of atonement or prayaschitta will actually purify you. So you can purify yourself, but you cannot free yourself completely from all sinful reactions. Agam dunvanti kachnina niharam iva bhaskara. That only devotional service will take away the roots of the karmic reactions completely. Otherwise, although you're taking away the reactions, and you will not have to suffer these reactions by purificatory processes recommended in the Vedic literatures, still the root cause will remain. And again, you will become entangled in the same activities. Mm. Prabhupada sometimes just said, like, someone who, due to illicit sex, gets a venereal disease, he may get himself cured by some medical treatment after a lot of pain, but what can he do when he's still addicted to the same illicit activity? Mm-hmm. He's bound to get it again, Prabhupada explains like this. So there we go, that as long as we are separate from the Supreme Lord, we are simply being caught up in karma. And there are many different people who in this world, and the most are simply karmis, who are trying to enjoy the fruits of their activities. And they have no right to do so, and therefore they get entangled in these laws of karma in very intricate, complex ways. And they cannot understand why misfortune is coming their way, but it is simply the result due to past impious activities. Then we have the jnanis, who are seeing this, and who come to the point that I've suffered so much in this material world, and I've had enough of it, and who finally come to the understanding that there is more than just matter. There must be something that is not temporary. We can understand that everything has its origin in an eternal existence, and they understand the eternal nature of reality, but they cannot understand the supreme form of the Lord. They are seeing the sufferings of the material energy, and they understand that there is not really enjoyment. They understand dukhalayam asashvatam. They understand the material world is a place of misery and temporary. That they can understand, but they are not able to understand the absolute truth. And they are also selfish. They are simply motivated by negative. They have a negative motivation. I want to become free from material suffering. That is their motivation. They have a negative motivation. So they're driven by fear for material existence, and they want liberation like this. The yogis, in the same way, are either wanting to merge, or a pure yogi who is actually understanding the Supreme Personality of God in the form of Paramatma can attain perfection. But such yogis are very rare. Actually, most yogis are also desiring to merge with the Supreme Lord. They mistake the super soul within the heart for the Supreme Lord, for themselves. So we have to become purified from all selfishness, and that is very difficult. So we are misers. The Kripana is holding on everything for himself, and he's always looking like, what is in it for me? What is in this situation? How is it for me, this situation? Is it favorable? Is it unfavorable for me? Okay? But we have to gradually give up this mentality. We can do it through practice. If you understand this point, truly understand it, then you can just act on it right now. You could act on it immediately and just not do anything for yourself anymore. Do everything for Krishna. It's not that, oh, it takes a long time, this process, because we have to overcome so many bad habits and they are so strong and therefore it's going to take a long time. No, it means from, I'm so attached to my bad habits that I want to take a long time to give it up. Actually, that is how it should be translated. Because if we really want to do it now, it can be done. Yeah. So we must give up this tendency to look what is our advantage in a particular situation. Rather, we should look what is the advantage for Krishna in a particular situation. And if we look everywhere, what's in it for Krishna? Not from what's in it for us, but what's in it for the mission of Krishna in this world? Krishna has in this world his mission, to make everyone aware of him, to give everyone knowledge of him. So if we can simply think like, what's in it for Krishna, then we start to think in a different way. But because we think, what's in it for me? We think, I don't like this place, I don't like that place. That is the problem. Because if we look at the advantage of Krishna, then we are ready to stay even in a place that we don't like. But when we think, what's in it for me, then we are whimsical. This is whimsical. Now that's all right, you know, it is nothing shocking when you are whimsical. That's to be expected. But it is one of the anarthas, which is blocking you from actually being able to connect with Krishna. Because of such an anartha, you cannot see Krishna. You can do anything in your service that is nice, but that anartha is still there. Right? Now your service will gradually purify that anartha, but if you hold on to it, then it will take a little longer, like that. So in this way, it is better if we just immediately, when we understand the philosophy very well, apply it to our situation right now, not somewhere in the future, but right now, and surrender. Okay? Just surrender. In that way, we can get the mercy of Krishna and very quickly become satisfied and become completely aloof from our material surroundings, because Krishna will be manifest in our heart. It says he will sit on the lotus in our heart. So in that way, then we won't care anymore about the external circumstances. Then we will be inspired from within. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. It's the other side of the coin you're talking about. But then again, if you do try to surrender, then obviously, then Krishna will reveal the next step that's also there. And if you act like that, then you are actually acting on a perfect platform. Then you will always feel Krishna very near. So it is possible. We are all feeling, okay, you're talking about the summer festival in Vyasaki, or we can talk about some days on Sankirtan, right? It happens. You feel the connection. You feel you're there, you know, like with... Suddenly, you're not just out there with all conditioned souls in the street, but you're actually there. Lord Chaitanya, you're his instrument, and it's just flowing right through you, and you feel it, right? And you're completely empowered, and no one can resist you. Anyway, it happens sometimes. And you feel like you're being used like an instrument. But it can be like that all the time. Why not? We can be like that all the time, if we want to. So, although we are not maybe right now succeeding so much, still you can help it a lot by consciously trying for it. To just say, well, we have so many anarthas, and it should take a long time, then you get that fatalistic mood, you know, like, well, what can I do, you know? I mean, it's just the drop on the stone, you know, it's going to take a long while, a long time. I mean, I've got a stone-like heart, and it's going to take a long time, it's bad habits, and it's going to take me forever. What can I do? I'm not so advanced. Yeah. No. You have to take a very advanced position. Then, by taking an advanced position, you will become advanced. Like today is Ekadasi. So there's Nitya Kriya and Naimitika Kriya. Nitya Kriya means your everyday, it's part of Bhajana Kriya. The first is that we begin with Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, etc. And then we come to Bhajana Kriya in the process of devotional service. So Bhajana Kriya means that we are engaging in worshipping the Supreme Lord in devotional service in activities which will give us Kriya, benefit. So the Nitya Kriya is what you do every day. Yeah? That is the devotional service you engage in every day. But the Naimitika Kriya is the special service you do on special days with the idea that you go beyond your normal limits, that you try to do something that you usually wouldn't do, and a special sacrifice. So Ekadasi is meant for that. That is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the mother of devotion. Right? Not automatically, you know, okay, Ekadasi today, great, you know, the mother of devotion, today it's going to be born, right? Because I'm here on Ekadasi. No, the idea is that you are going to try to kind of reach out beyond your normal platform, increase your chanting, increase your hearing, control your senses by fasting if that is favorable for your service, and so forth. Try and increase Krishna consciousness on that day in particular. That's the idea. Right? So that you can feel like, well, if I could chant 25 on Ekadasi, yeah, and I did my service, then why can't I actually do it every day? Yeah? Maybe I should do it every day. You can take, and then you've been lifted up by this Ekadasi. So, therefore, to just wait till you're purified, wait till the inspiration comes and then do it, yeah? Then you can wait a long time. It is much quicker if you try and make a conscious endeavor to act upon the philosophy, and to go for the surrender side when you understand. And then at least it will go quicker. Yeah, no, it is. It's like the weather forecast, you know. I mean, as a weather report, it's going to rain, right? Okay, you know, like you can bring an umbrella. Okay? You can bring an umbrella. In other words, if you know about your chart, and you would know, of course, there's two aspects to a chart. One aspect of the chart is the predictive side, and that is what everyone is always thinking about when it's astrology, like, you know, crystal ball, you know, tell me all. Right? You want to know whatever happens in the future. But there's also another side. And the other side is that you can see your previous karma. Yeah? You can see your previous karma in your astrology chart. No, not only previous birth, but you're seeing how you see your makeup. So, like, for example, in the chart, you have a sun. The sun is your physical appearance and your physical nature. So that's very strong. Okay? It is like your particular way you act, the way you do things, which the way I'm doing things. You know, like you see different people, like in our temple also, Dharma, I give some examples. We have Bhakta John, he has a particular body, and we have Mahaprabhu, who has a different body again, right? I mean, they're very different personalities, you know? I'm again different, like that. So that you can, that would show in the sun. If you look at the charts of the, then you would see a difference in the sun. I don't know Mahaprabhu's sun, but I know John's is in Leo. Yeah, but then you have a rising sign, which is behind that, which is the inner driving force, the inner mentality. Like if you compare John and myself, right? Then he has, you don't mind John, he has a sun in Leo, right? Sun in Leo, and a rising sign in Pisces, right? Whereas me, I have a rising sign in Leo and a sun in Pisces. Are you sure? Okay. All right. Maybe talk about somebody else then. But anyway, different natures. I'll argue with him about that later. Different natures are there. The point is that, like, if somebody would have a Leo, then he would have an external sun, he would have a forceful body. If he would have a rising sign, Pisces, then he would have a Brahminical inner nature, would be inclined towards Brahminical activity. Whereas if somebody has a Leo, then he's got a drive, right? Leo rising is a drive person, pushy, like me. But with a Pisces on the external means kind of interested in Brahminical activity. So all the push goes through the Brahminical activity. Yeah? Anyway, so like this, you can see how your karma is built up out of different components. Yeah? So the whole astrological chart shows many components. It doesn't it shows your Jupiter. Your Jupiter is your ability to
you could say your spiritual instinct, your ability to just instinctively understand spiritual matters. Your Mercury is your material intelligence, you know, dicing, slicing, calculating, stacking, or analyzing, right? That is your Mercury. Mine is lousy. You can already figure that out. Yeah. Like that, your Mars, you know, like some people, they are super capable. They're very intelligent people, but they have a lousy Mars, right? And as a result, because they have a lousy Mars, they can't get anything done, right? Because the Mars is the ability to get something done. So you can see your whole makeup in different components and how certain aspects in your nature contradict each other, etc. So you can understand a little more about your past karma in that way. So that way it's kind of useful. But all this prediction side of astrology is completely irrelevant, right? Because it can change. It can change just like that. Like the other day, we were talking about war with Madhav Maharaj in the office upstairs. And Maharaj, you know, about the predictions of war, etc. And Maharaj said, in 1975, he said in Vrindavan, he said, Prabhupada also said it, he said, so there's going to be a war. And it's going to start between India and Pakistan. And everyone was like, wow. And Prabhupada said, and what are we going to do? He said, the only thing we can do is to just flood the world in books. And then we can turn the tide. We can keep it away. And so, okay, that was what Prabhupada's answer was. So that's what you do when the predictions are that war is coming, according to Srila Prabhupada at that particular time. So in this way, the Sukriti from devotional service can change karma completely. Clapping the hand in front of the deities, etc. So it can even, you can even overcome the limitations of your nature. Like you may say, oh, I have a very bad Jupiter, so I mean, I'm useless for spiritual understanding. I may as well give up. Okay? So this is the problem with these astrology charges, that people see these charges and they see something bad and they think, oh boy, I can never overcome this. This is my karma. I'm stuck with this. Yeah. So, but as long as you are under the motes, it will give you some idea of how you're under the motes. Yeah. That way it can be used a bit, but it's not perfect. And it can easily be overcome by devotional service. The lame can dance, the dumb can become eloquent speakers, etc. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And in the Avanti Brahmana, 11th canto, says that the Rasi chart, the birth chart, applies only to that which takes birth. And the soul doesn't take birth.
Hmm.
True. Still, he had that desire to see him again. He was seeing Krishna. Yes, we see Krishna in so many ways. We see the effect of Krishna's activities. Right? We may not see him directly, but we're seeing how Krishna is working, and that is also Krishna, very much. Everywhere we see Krishna's hand. In everything, we can see Krishna's hand. And for now, when one cannot see Krishna face to face, then he can definitely perceive Krishna's hand in so many things, in so many arrangements, Krishna's plan, and in that way be very satisfied that Krishna is indeed actively partaking in the situation, and not just that he's left us all alone here to just slug it out until one day he'll be so kind to show himself. No, he's with us. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.